Team 33.
Abysmal. The worst thing I can say about it was that, yeah, there were loud, loud boos at halftime, but they were almost being clapped off at full time because the fans nearly felt sorry for them.
Team 33. Live every Friday night on OTB Sports Radio. Download the podcast now in the OTB Sports app.
Loads of stories across the back pages this morning and loads of really interesting developments, not only about the busiest weekend, Mick, in the GAA club calendar so far, which I presume is getting the juices going.
Big time, yeah. I think there's 15 county finals between Friday, Saturday and Sunday. It's kind of, we've kind of been drip feeding them over the last couple of weekends. There's been one or two here or there, but it all just really kind of takes off this weekend. I suppose we're in early November. Provincial campaigns are going to kick off in the next 3 or 4 weeks. Mm. So county championships need to get done at this stage, but some really, really juicy ones this weekend.
Do you get out and about to cover stuff, or are you?
Yeah, no, I do, yeah. I'm at the Longford final on Sunday, actually, and I think it's Mostrom's first county final appearance since 1992. They change manager mid-season. There's all sorts of always mad subplots going on in different club campaigns, and I think if you're following social media fairly closely and you see the passion and all the local commentaries to all these things, I think it's brilliant. It really is. It's obviously the grassroots of the whole, the foundation of the GAA, but it's just great to see it. And it is, county championships during the summer are great. It is hard beat club, and every county player will tell you that too when they go back. They would probably rank a club success as high as any county success, and there's a lot of really, really top players in action this weekend across all different codes.
Yeah, I see I've a young fella started going to Kilmacud Crokes over the last while, and they're obviously a super club. Is that how we officially sort
of... Yeah, one of the biggest clubs in Europe, I think. Yeah.
I think somebody was saying they're the biggest sporting club in the country, which is phenomenal, and I can see by it on a Saturday morning when there's 125-year-olds down there knocking it around. And like, the whole thing is so well put together, I have to say. They do an incredible job around it. But the buzz that's there at the minute with, interest in both finals and the football, obviously, this weekend. And I'm from Athlone, and I was at, there was a relegation slash, as it can only happen in GAA, you're either going into the quarterfinals or you're getting relegated, game in Moat about a month ago that I went out to have a look at. And like, it was the first time that I watched, COVID allowed me to watch one of the games. It was a Gary Castle game streamed last year, and it actually started me to get a little bit plugged back into what was going on back there, and that was kind of the reason I went down to see the game. I wonder is it everybody's experience that we've all plugged back into a little bit to what's going on that level a bit more than we might have done beforehand.
Yeah, I'd say it's like anything. If you're denied something for a while, you have the the real interest to go back in and go to a game again. Now, in fairness, some counties have gone over the top with people actually wanting to get involved in games from the stands, which we've seen in recent weeks as well, which is probably a worrying aspect. At least we haven't seen that in the last probably 2 or 3 weeks. But I think, yeah, you should really be longing to get back for that. Like, the adrenaline buzz of going to that. It's hard beat, like, when you're going to a match where it's your parish, it's all the people that you know.
Yeah.
And there's no buzz like that. I even think, like, county games, probably outside of an All-Ireland final, there's no county game will represent that. You know everybody out on the pitch. You know what they're doing in their everyday lives as well. So I think a lot of people are tuning back into that. And There'll be a lot of big attendances at county finals over the next while. Yeah. The Kerry football final usually attracts 8,000 or 9,000. As you said, Crokes beat Coola last weekend, who were going for 3 in a row in the Dublin hurling. And Paul Mannion, who was obviously, I'm sure people will be looking at him really closely, but Crokes this weekend, they're playing Ballyboden, another kind of super club. But people will be looking at Mannion very closely this weekend. He's probably been the best club footballer in Dublin so far this year. And people will long for him to be back in the county fold. And I suppose that's the debate around this time of the year. Who's putting their hand up for selection for the county team? There's always that bigger picture in the background as well. And there are plenty of players, even Kilmallock won Limerick. There's a couple of players like Oisin O'Reilly and a few more has put their hands up for John Kiley's squad maybe. So there'll be lots of guys putting their hands up for other county pounds over the next while.
The few comments coming in. It would be nice for you to cover Celtic's Europa League games every now and then, not just Manchester United and Liverpool, including a yawning emoji. Good morning to you, Robbie, on YouTube. We'll get to Celtic tomorrow. Aisling's going to be watching the game tonight and she'll be chatting to us about that in the morning. So stay tuned for that. And Paul McGee talking about the hurling after a Champions League night. Really? He asks. Paul, sit tight. Will you sit tight? It's a long show. There's loads to come. We're going to do a deep dive on it with Gareth Roberts a bit later on. So sit tight. We did want to continue talking about the hurling. And Henry Shefflin and his backroom team, I think everybody was keeping an eye on it after the full announcement had come, obviously, a couple of weeks ago. But not that surprising that it's a couple of Galway people that have come in and will know the lie of the land, I presume.
Yeah, no, I think Henry's made a couple of shrewd moves already. Bringing Richie O'Neill up with him, who was obviously with him in Ballyhale and was with him in Thomastown, is shrewd enough as it is. But then Kevin Lally, who was with Thomas's for, I think, three county successes, he brought success with Crockwell, he improved Kilnadeem and Leitrim when he was with them, the Galway Miners as well. He will basically be in tune with every player in the county over the last couple of years, and has been probably plotting against most of them with Thomas's. And then you have Damien Joyce as well, who was a nice link back to the All-Ireland winning backroom team in 2017, and who's still playing at Capitagal as well, so he's coming up against most of these lads week in, week out in championship. So I think there's been a couple of shrewd moves there. That's a fairly nice backroom team with outside voices, and obviously the greatest player that ever played the game at the helm, and then two guys that really know the nuts and bolts of Galway hurling as well.
Are they going to get, there was the chat when Henry came in that they might have a chat with Joe and see if he'd come back. Do you see it happening?
I don't know. It's hard to know, really. We chatted to Joe on the throw-in in, I think it was the week of the All-Ireland final, and he definitely sounded like a guy whose mind was made up.
Right.
And he said, anyone that knows me, I'm a very stubborn individual. I won't be changing my mind. That's it now. Mm. But if the best hurler of all time talks to one of the next best hurlers of all time, can he change his mind? I'm not so sure. I think Joe stepped away at the right time for him, and it's going to be interesting. I don't know whether that conversation will take place.
Well, on that, if you're Henry, are you, so forgetting about Joe for a second, are you thinking, I need to make this call? Is it almost a bit of a no-brainer if you're Henry Shefflin?
Yeah, he could make the call and it could be off the table straight away. But then maybe he'll potentially light a fuse under Canning to think maybe I could come back at some stage next year. I don't think Joe signing up for, you know, the full inter-county campaign, I don't think that's a runner. But potentially maybe when the weather picks up, maybe he's the sort of player that you could bring in February or March. But that doesn't really happen at county level anymore. You're either all in or you're not in there at all. So listen, it's going to be interesting to find out over the next, like, has the conversation happened yet? I don't know. Thomastown were only out last weekend, Henry's team, they were beaten in the Kilkenny Intermediate semi-final by an Owen Murphy inspired Glenmore team, so I don't know, he hasn't had much time to focus on Galway. But you'd like to be a fly on the wall. You'd like to know what that conversation is like. Maybe, is there a potential that he could be involved in the backroom team as well, Joe, maybe, if he's retired? Who has a better knowledge of all those players than someone who's soldiered with them for the last 10 or 15 years?
Yeah, I think that's part of the pitch. If you are Henry Shefflin and you do think that there's value to having Joe Canning back around the place, like, it is obviously partly due to the fact that he's one of the greatest hurlers of all time, and also the fact that he can have, like, that leadership and that influence on the younger players. Like, you'd have to assume that at some point that the text has gone out that obviously Henry's looking at games, and particularly so at the minute, but starting to look at games and talking to his backroom staff, and the text has gone out like, Joe, how are you getting on? We want to catch up for a coffee. Like, I mean, if you're Canning, right, and you reply to that with anything other than I'm grand, you carry on, you have to assume that if you're agreeing to meet up, you have to assume that the window's open.
Yeah, well, I think it would pique anybody's interest that I wonder what this lad has to say.
That's the thing, isn't it? Know? Like, that's, you know.
Does he want me to come back playing? Does he want me to be involved in the backroom team? Does he want to just pick my brain because I've been in there for the last 15 years? Does he want to know what some of the potential difficulties are? It's going to be really interesting, but I'd be amazed if they don't have a conversation of some kind face to face.
Yeah. And I'd be amazed that if, on some level, that he isn't back in around the place doing something or other, I think when you're a couple of months out from as well, and nearly as you say, that he has made his peace with the fact that he's done, gives him a great freedom mentally to maybe after a few months out, like, you know, you can skip the league, Joe, you don't need to worry too much about that, come back towards the end of it, we'll get you back embedded, and then, like, he's a fresh slate and he's suddenly coming back in. And
he also said he's no interest in coaching or anything any high level.
Right.
That he just wanted to work with the Portumna under-13s, under-15s. That's what he wants. That's what he said he wanted to do. But as we've seen in sport, things change quite quickly at times.
The succession planning at Galway has been really impressive. It's nearly like sort of how you would, if you try to map it out in terms of the people that are involved there. With, you mentioned about Lally, three Galway senior hurling titles in the last few years. Like, that's hard done in that county as well. And then looking down the layers as well, it's their succession is bang on here.
Yeah, and like Brian Hanley, who was the minor, he's a two-time All-Ireland minor winner manager. He was involved, I believe, in the the race for the senior job, and he's just stepped up to the under 20 job as well, which makes perfect sense. And maybe he'll be Galway senior manager in time, but Henry, I'm sure, will be linking him in with him as well. And like, he's got a lot of people around him that know the scene really, really well, and he's got a lot of really, really good sounding boards. As well as that, then you have the outside voice coming in, and Richie O'Neill's outside voice coming in as well, that just maybe might look at things a little bit differently because they're not, you know, right in on top of it, whereas the other lads are. So I think they have a nice mix, I have to say.
A nice mix, but like, impossible to make a case for them to get to the top of the tree next year at least. On the strength of Limerick, you're about to make the case, are you?
No, but I don't think anything is impossible. Like, they're the one team physically, even without Canning, that can match up with, they match up very well with Limerick. Now, they were only beaten by 3 points in the All-Ireland semi-final in 2020, playing a sweeper, which didn't really suit them. I expect Henry to go back to brass tacks with them and them to play a more direct game like they did when they won the All-Ireland in 2017. We've seen things turn around very, very quickly with managers before. Ballyhale were beaten in a county semi-final and beaten quite well by the Village in 2017. Henry came in and they went on a 17 game unbeaten run and won two Kilkenny titles, two Leinster titles, two All-Ireland titles. So I wouldn't say nothing is impossible. He's not taking over, you know, a county that's ranked 11 or 12 or anything like that. He's taking out a county that, you know, in racing terms, they always put little asterisks beside a county that can improve a lot, or a horse that can improve a lot. There's an asterisk beside Galway where they could jump up from 7th or 8th in the pecking order to 2nd or 3rd very, very quickly. So I wouldn't rule him out turning things around quite quickly.
Mark Dunning says, I think allowances might be made for Joe Canning re-coming in a bit later in the year. I think that's absolutely spot on, and we'll watch that with a bit of interest as well. His own Ballyhale Shamrocks going for 4 in a row against the Loughlin Gaels, and they have a nice little touch as well. I see that you've said there about letting frontline workers in for free.
Yeah, I think it's a great gesture. It's probably something that should have happened in most counties, but all frontline workers, I think you'd have frontline workers from many different counties maybe streaming into Nolan Park at the weekend now. It's a standalone game as well. I think we just did a thing as in the Independent today about county final ticket prices, so it's 15 quid, which is very reasonable, and obviously frontline workers get in for free. It was interesting to see no county was charging more than 20 euro except Kildare, who are charging 22 euro into their county final, which is an interesting one. And then there's another.
Well, Kildare, as we know, always see themselves as a little bit sort of hoity-toity, a little bit above the rest.
Your words, not mine, Adrian. I'm sure that's a quote at your colleague Jer as well, to be honest. But it's 22 euro to get into St Conleth's Park in Newbridge on Sunday, which is saucy enough in these times. The vast majority are 20, even with double headers, and many are 15 as well. But free attendance for frontline workers in Kilkenny is massive. You get to see TJ Reid, Colin Fenley, and many, many more. And, you know, it's funny, James O'Connor, who took over from Henry Shefflin, that's like, looks like a bit of a poison chalice. It doesn't look like, what more can you do? They won a county title last year. They're hot favourites to win the All Ireland already at this stage. So,
it's crazy, isn't it?
Well, Loughlin's have beaten them. They beat them in the county final in 2016. But that'll be an interesting one. I think that's on live on TG Carter Sunday as well. One of many exciting games over the weekend. And I mentioned Kildare there. Kildare is a really interesting subplot this weekend. So I don't think Naas have won one county football title in about 30 years. But they actually parted ways with their manager about a month ago, I'd say, about a week before
what
the semi-final.
There? Was it a bit?
Not sure. It's a bit shady exactly what did happen. But Owen Doyle, the county defender, played international rules for Ireland as well. He's taken over in a player manager capacity alongside Eamon Callaghan. So there's this would set some trend now if Naas are to win a county title with a player essentially managing them and picking the team. So they're coming up against Sarsfields, who are, you know, one of the big kind of Kildare strongholds. But that's going to be really, really interesting to see if they end the famine with a player manager at the helm. Maybe there's some sort of a trend that we'd see over time. Yeah. Even though I'm sure coming in as a player manager near the end of the season is a lot different than, you know, trying to manage your buddies for the whole year or several years.
Well, you're at that point, you're just in firefighting. Like, there's none of this sort of great planning that has to go into it. But the point about the 22 quid thing and the 20 quid, so this is, who runs these games? It's obviously the county board that are then obviously taking that money in, and theoretically it goes out around the county for, like, you theoretically you're spending your money so you can like get equipment for your kids.
Yeah, essentially it would be going back into the development of Connaught's Park, I'd imagine, and then some of it would filter back down to the clubs as well. Mm. But like, 22 does seem like adding on the extra two. I think people don't, you know, people just say, why can't it be 20 euro? And it's not as if they have, you know, an intermediate or a junior final as the curtain raiser. They have a minor final as the curtain raiser as well. So it's not a, you know, a big marquee adult game. So I think there's been a bit of ire raised about that already, and I'm sure there'll be a bit more coming closer to the weekend. I always say you shouldn't be putting people off going, you shouldn't have people giving out outside, and that potentially could. Whereas there's some great deals, like the Monaghan final is 15 quid at the weekend. Like, you're getting really good bang for your buck there, and same with Kilkenny.
Somebody, it's obviously the chase to get to 25, 30. It's the little creep. You can't jump straight to 25.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. I'd say they nearly would have been better off nearly jumping to 25 than leaving it at 22, because does anybody even carry coins around at this stage if you're going to the gate?
It's a good point. Although I presume they have, like everywhere now, has the little sort of... Can you buy the tickets down there? Depending on the game, I suppose.
Most places you're able to buy them online, and you can buy them on the day as well. But obviously you're going to be queuing if you buy them on the day. So I think that it's probably a good trend that they've set to avoid loads of people, you know, waiting outside grounds. If you just have your ticket bought, might be something that might even continue over time. After COVID, it was obviously one of the effects of COVID.
Yeah. Was there anything else that jumped out from you on the survey? I was just looking at it there in terms of the prices. They do tend to, they're all pretty standard. Nobody's outside of Kildare jumping the gun too much.
No, there's some interesting ones in Longford. There's a 50 euro family ticket where two adults and three children, secondary school children, are below. So that's... Now, that's quite good, because you could have been shelling out up to 80 or 90 quid otherwise. So things like that are good. And even there's a wheelchair ticket in Longford for 10 euro. And then the carer, who is probably going to be with the person that needs wheelchair access, is a fiver in.
That's
so I think those are good.
Smart.
There's a good incentives. You want to encourage people to go to the game. I think in Longford as well, by doing that thing with a family ticket, and like, you want to get kids at the match. Yeah. You know, you want to... That's where they're going to probably get inspiration to want to go training next year or emulate their heroes as well. So I think that's a great idea.
And the Meath, the game's come in all sorts of shapes and sizes of doubleheaders, standalone games. The doubleheader could be anything from the under-12s, B teams, to whatever's going on. But there's actually a really interesting one in Meath, isn't there, with a doubleheader there as well.
That's brilliant, yeah. No, you know, we don't talk about the GAA in terms of joined-up thinking too often. Mm. And obviously the LGFA and the Camogie Association are under a different umbrella. They're not under the GAA umbrella. But Meath this weekend have the senior ladies football final as the curtain raiser for the men's football final. And I think, especially in the year that's in it, like, to me, the Meath ladies were nearly the story of the sporting year, I have to say. And even, you know, there was four of them on the Late Late Show recently going through the sports file pictures. I just thought it was brilliant. And I think they've really captured the imagination. And in fairness to the Meath Chiefs, they've kind of maybe seen a bit of an opening here by having, I think, Dunboyne are playing in the curtain raiser. That'd be Vicky Wall, Emma Duggan, and lots more involved with the Meath team. And Dunboyne are playing then in the men's final as well. But I think maybe this has set the tone for what maybe other counties should be doing as well. We've gotten an awful lot better as regards coverage of female sports. Something like this, to have the women's final on the marquee day for the men's final as well. Like, there will be a lot of eyes on that. And I think a lot of tongues were wagging even when they just saw the way the fixtures were set. This has set the tone, I think, for other counties. And hopefully... a lot of the Camogie and ladies football finals will be given a lot more stature maybe in time, and put it as double headers. I don't see any reason why they're doing it at county level, so I don't see why any reason why you wouldn't do it at club level now.
Will many of these grounds be sold out, do you think?
No, the county grounds usually, like if you're looking at somewhere like, you know, Laois this weekend, you know, Moore Park is would hold 25,000 to 30,000. Mm. You have to remember as well, there's a localised element to it as well. Like, there's only a finite amount of people within a certain area. Yeah. Like, I live in Dunboyne at the moment, like, and there's a fair bit of, it's a fair suburb of Dublin at this stage, but there's still not going to be, you know, 10,000 people from Dunboyne or anything like that at the match. I don't think there are anything close to that in Dunboyne. Mm. But, the vast, vast majority of people associated with that town or that village will be at those games.
Who's in the men's final?
It is Dunboyne and Wolf Tones.
All right.
Yeah, so Dunboyne won it a couple of years ago. And Rathaut, I think we're going for three in a row this year. But I suppose the sign of a competitive county championship, and Tyrone is probably the best example of this, is having like a different winner nearly every year. I think this year is probably going to be something similar again. You don't probably want like what Ballygunner are doing in Waterford, you know, winning 8 in a row, you probably want it spread out. You probably want loads of teams thinking that they can win their county title. And that's probably the way in Meath, and it's probably the way in several other counties as well.
What we've touched on the Dublin final earlier on, what's your expectation of what happens? Are the semis this weekend, is it?
Yeah, semis this weekend, yeah. So Crokes and Bowden's going to be a fascinating game. And as I said, a lot of eyes will be on Paul Mannion. And obviously, Colin Keeney is still going strong with Ballyboden as well. That's a big derby game. And then you have Jude's on the other side of it as well, Kevin McManaman, who we didn't see anything really of him with Dublin this year, and with his involvement with the Irish Olympic boxing team as well. So it's going to be fascinating on the other side of that as well. There's so many different subplots going on too in Dublin. There's a lot of questions probably been asked after the Mayo game this year. Yeah. I don't think Michael Darren McCauley's playing with Ballyboden this year. Kevin McManaman didn't play with Dublin this year. Paul Mannion didn't play with Dublin this year. Jack McCaffrey wasn't involved this year. And you just wonder about the conversations maybe that are happening in the background.
Do you think there's a realistic chance that like the likes of Mannion, what age is he?
Mannion is, I think he turns 29 very soon.
So
I think.
plenty.
Oh yeah, he's in phenomenal shape as well. And he probably set a precedent for himself and maybe for others as well. He took a year out and went studying in China maybe 4 or 5 years ago and was able to slip back in. I remember him saying he got sick in the sink in Croke Park one night after playing half of a league game just because he was re-acclimatising or whatever. But there's no reason why someone like that wouldn't be able to get back into the... Like he could have 4 or 5 years left at intercounty level if he was to get back in. These are all the fascinating questions that go on in the background. Like we all see Dublin against Mayo last year, the casual supporter will wonder, where's Paul Mannion? And that's happened months before that. So in order for him to be playing for Dublin next year, those conversations need to happen probably now, and they need to try and make sure they have as many of those guys on board. And I'd imagine they'd have a massive point to prove next year now as well.
Yeah,
a lot of people are saying that their time is finished. That's after, you know, doing what no other team has ever done in 5 in a row and then in 6 in a row as well. And now all of a sudden they're beaten and they're finished. It's like the overreaction.
Yeah.
And it's what you just wonder, what is Desi Farrell and what's his backroom team doing to make sure that they're the kingpins again next year?
Yeah, well, you sure, like, I'm assuming that when things are going so well, you don't want to overly meddle with what's going on. But as soon as it comes off the rails slightly, I mean, off the rails is an extreme exaggeration, but slightly derailed, that at that point it's like, let's get out and have a look at this Mannion lad. He's still plenty of years ahead of him if he wants to give it, and if he's flying in the club championship, so you couldn't but put it back in. A few other bits and bobs that we want to touch on around the country this weekend, and some of the other bits and news that are coming through on the Cork Hurling backroom shuffle as well. McGerry Cunningham and Christy O'Connor have moved out of there. He's obviously looking to shake things up a bit, and Gary Keegan, I know, it is one of those that's come back in, and he's obviously somebody that will deal with them on the motivational side, suggesting that Cork feel as if they have the technical skill quality of player there, I suppose, to compete, but that unusually from a Cork point of view, that the attitude might be not right.
Yeah, potentially. Obviously, Gary's got an unbelievable CV and an unbelievable record between, he was involved with the Dubs, he was involved with Irish rugby as well, he was involved with Kieran Kingston the last time he was there as Cork manager as well. So it's not a massive departure or anything to get him back in. And I suppose a lot of it would be as well, you know, what are the ramifications of that 16-point hammering in last year's All-Ireland final? Cork were tipping away nicely and they were sprouting up like mushrooms, like we always say, overnight. Then all of a sudden, you know, it was bam, they're destroyed in an All-Ireland final. And from a coming team now, you wonder what are the mental kind of consequences of that defeat. So having someone like Gary with his expertise obviously will help there. Pat McCatty's in as coach. He's a former captain and a very, very well regarded manager and coach. I think Stephen Casey's in as S&C coach as well, so he's definitely shaking things up a bit, and probably not a bad thing given that, you know, they were beating the All-Ireland final so comprehensively last year. If you're coming back in and everything is the exact same, you're wondering maybe how are things going to change. So Kieran Kingston, in fairness to him, has definitely shook things up. And it's going to be really interesting to see how they react next year. Really, really interesting. Because you probably say they got to the All-Ireland final without beating any of the real big hitters. Mm. They didn't beat a Tip, they didn't beat a Waterford, and they obviously didn't beat a Limerick. They were beaten by Limerick twice. So going to be interesting to see all the underage success, All-Ireland minors and under-20s. You know, can they bring that to senior level? And again, what are the ramifications of the All-Ireland final? I think that All-Ireland final collapse, or whatever you call it, or you could point to Limerick's dominance as well. That will have effects. You think? I don't see them.
Scars like.
Yeah, I don't see them being a player this year.
Right.
Probably maybe next year or the year after. I think it will take a while. And as you say about the Dubs, if you're beaten by 16 points in All Ireland final, you think your setup and your team is really good going into it, and then you're asking questions like, okay, if we're beaten by 16 points by Limerick in this game and we're beaten 7 points in the Munster semi-final, like, well, surely we have to look at changing X, Y and Z. So there's probably going to be a few personnel changes as well there. And those young guys coming in, you just don't jump from under 20 to senior level. You just don't do it. It takes a couple of years at least. So I think probably by 2023-24 they'd be real contenders.
There's a possibility that been beaten by like 10 points or so by that Limerick team is actually not a bad result.
Yeah, well, like, if you look at Limerick or Waterford were beaten, I think 11 points the last two times they've played them, and they're one of the few teams that have really fronted it up to them.
Yeah.
So,
you know, but like everybody, you read, obviously there's the results driven, and like you have to, I suppose, you have to go back. It's like Kieran Kingston isn't going to go back and go, ah, listen, sure, that was a great all year out and we were beaten by 10 points. I do get why you would have to go back and have a look at things, but like, I don't know. It doesn't sound like you're fully bought into the idea that this Limerick team might go on to dominate the game for the next while, because you've said that Galway might put it up to them. You're making half a case for Cork now in a couple of years' time.
I'm probably playing devil's advocate, to be honest with you. I do think Limerick's age profile is absolutely tailor-made for being there for the next 3 to 4 years. I think they'd probably win maybe two of the next three, whether that's two in a row and to make it four in a row. I'm not so sure. They have a couple of injuries now. Peter Casey's out. He's hoping to be back for the latter stages of Munster Championship. His place may have been taken by Barry Murphy, who's also out with a cruciate. So they haven't really had any of those really big injuries to derail them in recent years. So, you know, if something were to happen and there was a suspension to one of their other big players. And it's funny, if you look at, you know, they've all the style and everybody talks about the likes of Keane Lynch and Aaron Gillan and these guys, if they were missing someone like a Will O'Donoghue, who's their enforcer at midfield, who does so much. I was listening to PM O'Sullivan was on with Gerder a few weeks ago. These are, to me, someone like him is nearly the most important player for Limerick, because he just enforces everything around that middle third where they're Lord games. So if they can keep everyone fit, they're going to be really, really hard beaten. But yeah, things are never go plain sailing.